Welcome to Beyond the Bio, a podcast that dives deep into our exceptional leaders at Bain and spotlights the incredible work they're doing. You can look up their bios online, but that only scratches the surface of who they are. We share the stories of why our leaders are truly extraordinary. Joining me today is Kara Groover, our Chief Talent Officer. Kara has been at the firm for more than 35 years and has served in a variety of leadership roles that we'll dive into today. On a personal note, Kara was one of the office heads that made my transition into the recruiting role so easy for me, as we met frequently when I was in Boston. And oh yeah, for the last couple of years, she's also been my boss. Kara, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Keith. Looking forward to the discussion.
Great. And today I want to talk with you a little bit about your journey to Bain, your extensive background in leadership roles, and looking ahead to our people-first approaches and the priorities for the upcoming years. But maybe we can start where we always start, a little bit of an origin story. Just share with our listeners where you grew up and what your plans were, what you wanted to be when you were younger.
It's always hard for me to say where I grew up because I actually moved several different times. But let me talk a little bit more about how I grew up, which is I was raised in a household where my dad was a campus minister and my mom was a special ed teacher. So for me, life was all about education as a youngster, how you learn new things, how you interact with people and support them. And as I went into my college years, honestly, I'd never been exposed to business at all. Our discussions around the dinner table were issues people were having, things we were learning, things and experiences we were having. It wasn't talking about the newspaper.
Right.
And so when I went to school and started to look at a career, one of the reasons I was attracted to Bain was it was a great opportunity to just get introduced to the business world.
Now, did you go to college and major in business or did you choose something different?
Yeah, no, I went off to college at Dartmouth. The reason I went to Dartmouth is because you asked me where I grew up. Home to me was New Hampshire. That's where we spent every summer growing up. And so I was one of those less courageous people that applied to one college and got in and said, I'm going to go to Dartmouth. In fact, I said I was going to go to Dartmouth since I was 6 years old wearing a Snoopy Dartmouth t-shirt. So I headed off to Dartmouth. I did what felt comfortable to me, and what felt comfortable to me at Dartmouth was psychology, given I kind of grown up talking about people and supporting people, and actually computer science, because I loved problems and logic. That was my dual major at Dartmouth, which seems kind of odd, computer science and psychology, but maybe it was the precursor of why consulting was the perfect career for me, because consulting is all about solving problems, using logic to solve problems, and working with people and getting them to change.
Were there any obstacles or surprises that you encountered? That was the early days, maybe not of computer science, but computers were really starting to become a thing at that time. And I can't imagine there were a lot of females in STEM fields and in computer science fields. Was that a challenge or was it accepted and not an issue at Dartmouth at the time?
That's a great question, Keith. I don't know, maybe I was just a little naive. When you talk about challenges for computers, even just finding a computer, having a floppy disk, making sure you could get a printout of your spreadsheet were big issues. I don't really feel like, it's interesting, even my whole career, Keith. In some respects, I have felt very lucky that being a female, in some respects, I feel like has created opportunities for me because I think people have been looking for ways to support me and see my success. And so I'd probably say it's had more advantages for me than disadvantages, although there were certainly circumstances I could talk about where it was hard.
That totally resonates with me. There's a lot of things like that where you just say, at this stage, it's all new and I don't have time to worry about what you're doing. We're kind of figuring it out together. Can you help me in lab? That's all that matters to me.
We are definitely figuring out a lot of things together.
Now, you end up joining Bain after Dartmouth. What was that process like? How did you get introduced to Bain?
Literally, I had no understanding of business. So all these companies are coming to campus and everybody's talking about Bain. I mean, Bain was the hot consulting firm. And so I decided I should go interview with all the consulting firms, big, small technology consulting firms. And the reason I came to Bain is what I vividly remember is that in every single one of my Bain interviews, I actually got to know my interviewer. There was something personal about them. They were talking about themselves and their life. If I went to the office, you could tell looking at their office something about them. Mm-hmm. And that was so important to me and felt very, very different than all the other consulting firms. And that's what attracted me to Bain.
It's funny you would say that. When I took on this role in recruiting, one of my peers at the time reporting into Russ Hagee was Todd Centuria, who was my final interviewer and extended the offer to me. And so 17 years, 18 years after that interview, to be in staff meetings where he's arguably a peer was like surreal to me. But we had a relationship my entire time at Bain because of those interviews he gave me when I was 21, 22. So that totally resonates with me now.
Well, and it gave you so much of the sense of the culture, right? You knew that when you came, you were going to work with people that you could get to know. They were going to care about you and your personal background. And I think that we live that every day at Bain.
Yeah. And so when you're an AC, does it immediately click for you? Like you just jump right in and say, man, I'm exactly where I belong.
I'm sure you may ask me this question later, because when I was an AC, things were so different than they are now in many respects. I feel very fortunate. When I came to Bain, there were 200 ACs in the Boston office in my class. I came into a company, it felt like all these other college kids were kind of with me. So there was a big comfort in that.
Right.
And there were 10 of us from Dartmouth. And so none of them were close personal friends, but I certainly felt like I just kind of an extension of the Dartmouth family coming in. So that felt comfortable, kind of having a huge peer set in the amount that Bain invests in training, right in the Boston office, going off to, you know, AC training together. I felt like I had a group of people that had my back, were my friends, I could ask lots of questions. And this, I felt like the people I was working with were people that I had met during recruiting. They were invested in me. They cared about training me and teaching me. The day-to-day stuff of what I was doing, I had to learn. But yeah, I felt like I had the background. Okay, I know where I can build an Excel. We didn't even have Excel, the calculators. I was doing math on calculators and taking my spreadsheets and doing some analysis. And so, yeah, I felt like I could do that. I felt like I had the analytic background required.
Yeah, the tools change a lot. I mean, the tools, even from when I joined, were just very different. Are there any stories that stand out to you about those AC days? We sort of treat them as legend at Bain. What would you share with
people? I feel like I have a million of them, Keith. I mean, literally, we had a Bay computer. I mean, we didn't have individual computers. So if you had to build a model for your client, you literally had to go to a spreadsheet and say, I want to sign up to use the computer in my Bay between these hours. Mm-hmm. And then you'd create a model and you'd push enter. And literally, it could take 15 minutes, 20 minutes for the computer to run. So you'd go down and play a game of ping pong. And I think that's where like the origins of the ping pong tables came from, is you had this dead time.
Right.
When you were just waiting for models to run with nothing else to do but watch them, see if they were going to crash.
We need to do a memory lane episode, because we were double staffing when I joined. And people would say, well, how could you do two clients at once? I was like, well, when you needed industry data, you would call investor relations and have them FedEx like the last 5 years of annual reports for the five biggest competitors so you could build the market map. But FedEx wasn't going out today, so they'd go out tomorrow and you'd have it the day after tomorrow. So you had time to work on your other case because you had nothing to do.
Exactly. Well, then we could talk about slides, right? And our slide design kits and our acetates and our X-Acto knives. And here we were getting on airplanes with X-Acto knives and making slides with acetates on airplanes.
Yeah. You had the presentation toolkit, and the junior person on the team had to carry the box. Like a lot of us, like me, after a couple of years as an AC, you chose to go back to business school. Yeah. Was that always the plan? I know a lot of ACs go back to business school. It sort of fluctuates over time. But did you know that was a thing you wanted to do when you joined Bain? I know I did.
No. I mean, again, when I joined Bain, I joined because I didn't know what the business world was like. And I wanted to see what it was like and experience it and then kind of figure out what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. After a couple of years at Bain, I thought that I'd kind of figured it all out. I knew the business world. I'd done consulting. And that what I really wanted to do was be a professor at a business school. And my path to get there would be go to business school, go into consumer products, and then go back to be a marketing professor at a business school. So I think it's pretty funny that 2 years into Bain, I was like, learn this, done this, tore up my frequent flyer cards, did not apply for an offer to come back to Bain, said goodbye to everyone, and I thought I was leaving for good.
Yeah. So many ACs, myself included, the irrational confidence on how much I knew after 2 or 3 years at Bain was off the charts. Now, you did end up coming back. And so how did that come about? And what was that phone call like? And you rejoined in 1990. So maybe you can share a little bit about sort of that year. That was a really pivotal moment in Bain's growth as a firm.
So I went off to business school. I did follow my path. And I went and worked for a consumer products company for the summer between business schools. And the reasons that I had left Bain is because I felt like I wanted to make sure that I was having an impact in the decisions I was making. I wanted to develop more expertise in a particular area. And so I went off for the summer to try to accomplish that. I loved my summer, but literally the last 2 days of my summer, I spent at a photography shoot with an eyedropper of tomato sauce and a fork of lasagna. And the reason was we were taking new pictures of the packaging of the product that I worked for in the summer, hoping that some brilliant new packaging would impact the sales of this product. And so at the end of the summer, I said, I had been working with car manufacturers on complexity reduction. And I had been working with industrial distributors on the strategy and the growth for their company. Would I rather make recommendations on those big issues or make decisions like where should the tomato sauce go on the pork lasagna? Decided that maybe coming back to Bain, maybe there were lots of other benefits of consulting that I had overlooked and I should come back to Bain. And that at Bain, what I could do is as I got more senior, I'd see the impact of the decisions over a longer period of time. And I could choose places I wanted to have expertise and develop more expertise in those places.
Of course. I want to keep going on this a little bit because 1990 was also one of the years that a lot of us who joined Bain, I joined a few years after that, talk about as a really pivotal moment for Bain. And without getting into the details, it was one of those years where we didn't know if we were going to make it as a firm. And I think that changed a little bit of our DNA and how we approach things. So maybe you can talk a little bit about that for people, because I do think it's a big part of why our culture is the way it is today.
Just so that people that are listening have the context, Bain was started by Bill Bain and five other founders of the firm. They were with the firm and did so much for us in terms of creating our mission, our focus on results for clients. In the late 80s and early 90s, they decided they'd made a huge investment in this firm. They created this firm. They felt like there was a way for them to take some of the equity and some of the investment that they've made out of the firm and made the decision to leverage up the firm a bit and take a lot of cash out of the firm. And that came at a time where we had a couple of rough patches as consulting firms, the consulting industry does. And so the timing happened to be kind of a maelstrom of storms, which put us into kind of some challenging financial positions as a firm. And the partners of the firm at that time, that were about 70 of them, had to come together and say, what should we do to make it through this period of time? And those partners all had to secretly vote whether they wanted to stay with the firm and make the firm and be part of the future of the firm. They all did. And they really all held hands and said, this is as much our firm as Bill Bain's and the original founders of the firm. And we're going to take this firm to the next generations through time. And it was really pivotal, a little bit challenging to live through those times. It wasn't long. It was literally kind of a couple of months of feeling like we weren't quite sure what was going to happen, looking at our peers and wondering if we'd be around. But as soon as we got through that period and we had that commitment from the partners, it really did change the culture of Bain in making sure that every single leader really invested in this being the place they wanted it to be. And that was a recommitment and everything in our mission statement about client and results, but also the importance of people, the importance of making commitments to our team, building the trust on our team, and quite honestly, making sure that nothing like that ever happened again in the history of Bain. And there has just been a huge commitment to that. We're in the midst of another challenging time where there's times of uncertainty and demand for consulting tends to go up and down a little bit. It's demand tends to be the weakest in times of uncertainty. And Bain committing to, we are committed to our team, we're committed to our people and doing the right things for our team and our people, even during those times of uncertainty.
So Kara, coming out of that difficult chapter, we get back on track after a couple months, like you said, and we start opening new offices. And you were, as I learned later, one of the founding members of the Chicago office. Can you talk a little bit about how that came about?
I know you work out of Chicago now, so it's deep and dear to my heart, Keith. I had been back at Bain a couple of years as a consultant. My husband is actually a doctor. He's a pediatrician, and he was going through the match process and only applied to programs in Boston and Chicago and got matched to a program in Chicago. Unfortunately, Bain did not have an office in Chicago at the time he matched in Chicago. So I walked into the head of the Boston office at the time and said, I need to move to Chicago. Luckily, they were gracious enough and said, great, we've been thinking about starting up an office. Why don't you go out there and be the third person in that office? We have a partner and a EA, an assistant, and you can be the third person in that office and help start it up. So I feel like I kind of got to run a little startup within Bain.
Yeah. And what was that like? Because we've had a couple people on who've talked about starting offices around the system. Chicago was small for a little while. But when was that, and who were some of the people that you worked with when you joined? Because there's like a pioneering crew or a launch team, if you will.
Well, it was so much fun because one of the reasons I stayed at Bain so long, Keith, I just feel like I've had so many different experiences within Bain. So I've got this great comfort of this team of people, this firm, this culture that I love, and I get all these unique opportunities to learn. So, I mean, it literally was like a startup. We were like, do we hire three people next year or four or five? You know, we only have three case teams. Like, what clients do we go serve? Do we choose this little airline? Do we choose this bank to work with? Where should our office be? How should we decorate that office? How should we like lay it out? Every single one of those decisions we had to make as this little team. And so it was so fun because we felt like we owned it. And many of the people that were part of this team with me in Chicago are still there. Krista Ridgway was one of the original people there. My very first case team in Chicago, my two brand new consultants were Julie Wilgorn at the time, Julie Kaufman now, who's our chief diversity officer and one of my dear friends, and Michael Collins, who's our COO and was our CFO. And another dear friend served as a co-office head of Chicago when I was the office head in Boston.
It's funny, the longtime listeners will know that Julie was on the podcast as well. And we had a good trip down memory lane because Julie Wilgorin, her pre-married name, was also my first manager at Bain. And Michael Collins was the office head for a long time, including the office head when I got promoted to partner. So I know them both really well. And it's great to see them both as leaders in the firm. And Krista has been a friend since I joined. And exactly. So lots of familiar names there. When you think about building the office and you think about building your career, left Chicago in a good place when I got here. It was a great office. Thank you. But you did go back to Boston.
And I'd like to say when I left, I was a third employee. When I left, there was 49 and a half because I was the half. But I'd worked part-time for many, many years in my career. But go ahead. Yes, I moved back to Boston.
And it was 49. It was about 65 when I joined. And I remember my start class had 12 associate consultants, and we thought we had gotten way too big and we'd never know each other.
Exactly.
For those listening, the inside joke, there was 12. Chicago is about 800 people now, and the office was 65 back then, and we'll probably have 60 or 70 AC start this year in Chicago alone. So times have changed a little bit. But Kara, I want to pick up your journey a little bit because you ended up going back to Boston. What prompted the move? Was that just more about going back home and being closer to family?
Personal again. My husband spent 3 years of his residency in Chicago, and then he got matched to a fellowship at Boston Children's, and we raised my hand again and said, I'm coming back and I'm pregnant again. And everyone was just welcoming to make the move happen. So
that's where you started taking on leadership roles beyond just the client leadership roles. Can you talk about maybe the practice area roles first? Because I think those were the first couple that you had.
I'll talk about it in two contexts. One, just tying the story together a bit. I said when I came back to Bain post-business school, I thought, well, I want to come back and develop some expertise in an area. And interestingly, I then decided to make a whole bunch of staffing decisions because at Bain, you do get to make decisions about what you want to get staffed on. And you're balancing a whole bunch of different things between type of work and people and locations of that work. I had made a bunch of decisions and actually hadn't done any consumer products work. So I actually got promoted to Bain as a technology partner, had spent many years running up to Bain doing technology work. And I'm kind of famous now for raising my hand and saying, I need or I want something. And so as a brand new partner, I walked into my office head in Boston and said, by the way, I'd like to be a consumer products partner. And again, they were incredibly supportive and said, sure, if that's what you want to do, we'll make it happen. Right. I got assigned to consumer products client as the third partner on that client. 5 years later, I was the client head on that client. 15 years later, I was still working with that client through three CEO shifts. And through that expertise and getting deep on working with clients and consumer products, I actually was asked to serve as our head of the consumer products practice in the Americas.
Yeah, and that's really neat to hear because I think there's a couple things I would point out to people listening. One, you went through 15 years with one client, and I've had a couple of clients, not that long, but multi-year relationship with clients. And that's where you really get to know the organization well, and you really get to understand it. And I think that's where Bain becomes invaluable to them. The other thing is that the leadership of running the business of Bain oftentimes comes up through the client side. Yeah. And that's sort of the ticket to the party, if you will. You then take on another leadership role as the head of the Boston office, which is, I think, probably where I really got to know. I obviously knew who you were before that. But, you know, you started that in 2012. I started my role in 2013 and came out to meet my team and was like, I should probably meet the office head and hear what's going on with recruiting. What was it like transitioning to the office head role? Because that's where you start dealing with HR issues and people issues and finance and all these other things that you don't necessarily see the same way on the client side. What was that like? And was that just for a new challenge, or share a little bit more about why you did that at that point?
Well, first of all, servant leadership roles at Bain, you don't apply for, you don't raise your hand for. We actually go through a process for every one of our servant leader roles that are all rotational roles that you typically serve in for somewhere between 5 to 7 years. So someone goes out and does a whole bunch of interviews about what's important in this role, what are the skills we need in this role, and then someone comes and asks you if you would be willing to do this for the firm. And so it is very much an honor to feel like you are being asked to play an important role for the firm, and very, very few people turn those down. So that happened to me when I was in Boston, that I was asked to serve in this role. I was honored that the partners in Boston might think that I was qualified to help lead them and lead the office. and pretty darn overwhelmed, to be honest, because the person who had been in the role before me was Bob Bicek. And the reason the role was open was because he was selected to be our worldwide managing director.
That's right.
And so, and we needed someone to step into the role. So that's a little bit intimidating to think that you're stepping into that.
And it's a different type of office because it has so much of our corporate staff there as the headquarters. So it's a large consulting staff office, but it is a very large Bain office.
With a very diverse staff and therefore a diverse set of issues and a culture and a team you're trying to bring together as one. But it's an operating job. I mean, it's also interesting, Keith, because it's not a consulting job. I'm not doing strategic work and advising other people on how to make decisions and do things. Like, I actually had to do them myself.
Right.
I had to build my team and figure out who my team should be and make decisions about who the people on that team to be. And I had to make, as you said, a whole bunch of day-to-day decisions about HR issues, positive and negative, you know, who you're promoting in the office. I mean, darn, I got to make really tough decisions about what cereal to stock, how much money to spend on free bananas and oranges, all those things.
Of all the issues we get surveyed about from time to time in Chicago, the cereal selection is probably one of the most contentious, right up there next to which flavor of bubbly drinks to put in the office.
And they're contentious.
Very passionate, very passionate. No. These are definitely not real world problems. But Kara, you transitioned to London after several years as the Boston office head, as our chief transformation officer. I will assume that that opportunity came about a little bit because of personal need and a little bit because of the servant leadership stuff you talked about. What happened in that role? Maybe you could share some. There were a couple of unexpected things came up.
Yeah. I mean, how did it come about? I mean, you're right. I mean, I rotated out of the Boston office role. So I had an opportunity to take, honestly, a couple of months off, which I know you, Keith, are going to do the same thing. Sabbaticals at Bain. We are big supporters of people going away and taking time to think. And they all come back more committed to Bain. I took some time off and I came back and I said, gee, one of the things I haven't done at Bain is be in a global role and actually live in another part of the globe and experience much more of our global team. I realized that one of the things I really loved about the Boston office job is that it was an operating job. And right. So doing an operating job. And so when I was then asked to be the chief transformation officer and I could move to London and do it, it kind of fit everything that I was looking for and articulating for in terms of the job. Lots of things happened in that role. It was interesting. I was supporting, we had a new worldwide managing director, Manny, who's our current worldwide managing director. And so really the role was helping him as he looked at Bain and all the things that we needed to be doing to continue to grow, to turbocharge our growth, to make sure that we were playing in a digital world, make sure we were bringing in lots of different types of talent and expertise into the firm, was helping partner with him on how do we actually do that and how do we make change happen.
And then COVID.
Yes. And then COVID. And then I came back to Boston and then I got asked to take on a new role as our chief talent officer. Yes.
And was there a sense that this was an extension of the work you had been doing? I mean, you had now run a practice at Bain. You had run one of our largest offices. Your transformation role gives you visibility into sort of how the firm operates at the most senior levels, which arguably you had good visibility into. The chief talent officer role, is that just the next logical step in the journey or a different challenge altogether?
I don't think I could ever tell you that I had a logical path, Keith. I mean, when you sit here now and you look back, you can explain it logically. But let's be honest. At the time, every decision I made was like, well, what do I think I want to do for the next 2 or 3 years? And then I'm going to go do that. And then I'll figure out where I'm 2 or 3 years from now. So there was no path. There was no logical conclusion. I was asked to take on this new role. We had a need for additional leadership in our chief talent officer role. And there's been definitely new challenges in this role. I'm pleased to be serving, and I serve in a rotational role in this role, and there'll be many other chapters ahead for me as well.
Kara, I want to pick up your journey in your chief talent officer role and talk a little bit about that, because you have a big influence over how people develop at Bain, and that's everyone at Bain, not just the consulting staff, not just the business function staff, but it sets the tone for all of our careers at Bain. Maybe we can start by just describing the scope of the role as you're doing it today and the types of things that you're touching day to day with your job.
One nice thing about my job and one thing that's fun is I'm a core part of our global operating team at Bain, which really feels like I'm in the midst of making all the decisions about running our business. I think about my job as a part of that team, really about kind of 4 big building blocks. So who is the team that we need at Bain? And as Keith said, this is everywhere. What types of general consulting talent we need, ACs and consultants, what kind of expertise we need, what kind of machine learning software engineers we need, our business function team. But how do we think about all the talent that we need in the future and how we're going to build that talent and how we plan to build that talent? So that's kind of piece number one, building the right team. Piece number two is making sure that once we have that team, we can actually deliver on the value proposition for at each and every one of those team members. So where are the places that we're really going to be differentiated? We've talked a lot about our culture at Bain and how that is a distinctive advantage for us, but making sure we're clear on what our value proposition is and that we are living up to that, measuring that, living up to that, innovating, tracking our success around our value proposition. Thirdly, I think about operating efficiently and effectively. We need to make sure that we understand where within our talent process, our talent value chain, we want to be best in class. And where are there places that we want to be best in cost? Because we need to make sure that we're effective as an organization. And that's part of our value proposition. So that's kind of part number three. And then part number four is really working as one talent organization. We have a big team. We have teams that are in local offices, teams that are in regions, teams that work with practices. And we all need to team together to make sure that we are optimizing and being consistent in our experiences.
And what have been your top priorities over the last couple of years as you help us transition to a firm that when we joined was very small and is now 70 offices, approaching 20,000 people in countries all around the world? I mean, we are a much more scale operation and talent is the engine that makes everything else work.
For sure. In the last couple of years, a lot of what I've tried to accomplish is quite honestly managing through what have been some challenging times. I mean, you talked about COVID. I mean, just managing through how we're going to deal with COVID. What are our policies going to be? How do we support our people? You know, get technology in their homes. And then there's been a lot of other things outside our four walls that we invest a lot of time in making sure that we're supporting our people through.
Right.
You know, whether that's wars, changes in politics, policies, et cetera. So honestly, there's a piece of my job that's just helping support our organization and make the hard decisions around all of that. Putting that aside, kind of big strategic changes, we've made major shifts in our team. What are the types of talent that we hire from? What are the sources of talent that we hire from? And Keith, you've been at the center of all this. But major, major shifts when you just look at who we're bringing into the firm and the diversity at all levels, not just diversity of backgrounds, diversities of skills, diversities of educational backgrounds. So huge emphasis on getting much more diversity into the firm and then supporting that diversity once they're here. And again, you've had Julie on the podcast, so I'm sure you've talked a lot about that, but that has been a huge emphasis of ours. We spend a lot of time on making sure that we are supporting the well-being and the sustainability of everybody on our time. And that's been a big shift that I've seen over the last couple of years at Bain. We know the last couple of years have been really challenging from a mental health perspective. And so making sure that we have the support, the openness to talk about how you're doing, how you can bring your best self at work has been a big shift. And I feel really great about what we've accomplished there. And then we're doing a lot to figure out how we work as an operation and how we work as a team and how we evolve, especially around technology. Where can we use technology in the recruiting process to make sure that we're using the latest tools, partly as a part of assessment and tracking of how we're doing? We are using lots of new technology and how we talk to our recruits and our marketing and our branding, which we're excited about. And that applies to kind of every part of Bain, in the back office, how we run our teams and how we make sure that people are spending the time on what only people can do.
Yeah, I think it's too simple a title to say Chief Talent Officer. I sit on the staff calls now with you every other week, and the range of topics that could be on the agenda in any one meeting, and you give us an hour. And one of the things I've really liked is you talked about being your best self at work or bringing your best self to work. And it felt corny the first couple of times, I got to admit, but you always have us start with an inspirational story. And we just go around the horn and spend the first 15 or 20 minutes of every meeting with people just talking about their wins for the week. It felt weird at first, but you realize you get so caught up in, I've got to do this. This is breaking. We got to fix this. Let's figure out a solution. You don't really stop and celebrate the successes that you've had. And what's been really great is as a team, and it's a senior leadership team, not all the wins are at work. People are sharing personal stories and just getting to know each other as a team. And as a talent organization that has so many things that we have to work together on, it turns out that little bit of quality time at the beginning of our biweeklies means a lot, and it really helps. I want to talk a little bit about, as we start to wrap up, servant leadership. You've referenced it a few times. We've had other guests reference it a few times. We're going to have other senior leaders on that I'm sure will mention it as well. What does it mean to you, and what does it say about our firm that we think about it that way?
I think it means that it reinforces kind of some of the story that I started with in the 90s. That is, we are all owners of the firm. We are all leaders of the firm, and we all play a role in that. Obviously, our firm exists to serve our clients. but a reminder that we are building and creating a firm that we're proud of and want to lead in the right way, and that everybody has a chance to do that. Because almost everybody that's been around at Bain for a while has served in some kind of servant leadership role, whether it's in the office, at practice, et cetera. So we all feel like that's a responsibility of ours and a key part of making the firm what we want it to be. There's also something really nice about servant leadership or rotational roles, which we do them for a long enough period. I mean, most people are doing them 5 to 7 years, which is a pretty long period of time. You're getting down the experience curve. I mean, someone's teaching you, training you how to do that job. But also, after you've done the same thing for 5 or 6 cycles or years, sometimes it's more than that many cycles, right, that the cycle happens multiple, that actually having someone new come in that brings some new ideas, potentially, might think about doing things in a different way, I think is part of what helps innovation happen at Bain, which is pretty great, actually. So you can build on what someone else has done and then build on the success with some new eyes and new ways to carry things forward.
It certainly keeps us fresh, and it certainly keeps us kind of at the forefront and doing some of the things we would suggest to our clients that we do. And we've been fortunate to have a steady stream for now 5 decades of people willing to step up into those types of roles and share their expertise and share their time. So, Kara, as you look back over your leadership roles at Bain, I'm a little bit selfish, so maybe I think the chief talent officer role was the most important one by far. But as you look back all of your leadership roles at Bain, what are you most proud of? What do you look back on and say, yeah, I did that?
I thought you were going to ask me what's the most fun, and I was going to be like, working with Keith Bevins. Like, that's definitely the most fun.
Clearly the soundbite we need to put on the highlight reel. But let's go beyond me for a second. What are you most proud of during all of your time at Bain?
Honestly, Keith, I look back on the things I'm proudest of is where I've built a team that's accomplished amazing things. And so it just seems kind of cliche, but when you say our CTO team, our leadership calls coming together and people sharing, and people collaborate with each other in very different ways, and they work together, and I think they feel a part of something, and we join things together that create new synergies by someone in recruiting and talent acquisition thinking differently about training, or having an idea about how we train, or an idea about how we're handling an employee relationship issue, or an idea about how to handle COVID, whatever it is, right? Those are the things I think I'm proudest of, because I think I've created something that is so much beyond me. It's bringing the skills and capabilities of a whole group of people to a new level. And we've accomplished something and people have enjoyed it. So that's one example. I could talk about the partners in Boston and bringing that group together to tackle certain things. Those are the examples that come to life for me.
And maybe I'm going to close with a little bit of a crystal ball thing, and we'll have to come back in a couple of years and see how you answered this. But what are you excited about for the next chapter for the firm? Forget you and your team, but for Bain. What gets you excited about the next, say, 5 years for Bain?
I think we have so much opportunity and growth ahead of us, and so much change, so many opportunities. And honestly, I'm really excited to see the next generation of leaders at Bain come in, be in their positions. I've been around Bain a long time, 35 years, but I'm really excited to see who will take the mantle and lead us through the next 30 years and watch that team succeed, because there's just no stopping us. And the core reasons I came to Bain, which is a group of people that care about driving results, having an impact, not wasting time, no politics, caring about each other, that has all existed through my 35 years, and it will continue to exist in the future. But where we'll take that, I can't wait to see.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on today, Kara. We are long overdue. I wish we had done this when I first started my role. Jeez. But I really appreciate you taking time to join us on the podcast and share a little bit of your story. So thank you very much.
Awesome. Super fun.